Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Rise and shine, sports investors. It is another beautiful day in the neighborhood. Thursday, October 22nd. Let's cock-a-doodle do it. This is the early line right here on Sports Grid, giving you the edge. I'm Dane Martinez, and we welcome back my main man, Kevin Walsh, burning the candles at both ends, trying to give you all the information you need to make it a profitable day, and we will try to put the fun and functional sports content at the same time. How you doing, Kev? What'd you do with your big day? You were missed here with the early line crew. What's going on, brother?
Yeah, what's going on? I feel like I should have set it up to play like Eric Bischoff's theme song right there, you know? But I'm excited to be back in the saddle. I popped in for a little bit. Joe PCP holding it down. Appreciate that. Yeah. And look, we're ready to roll. I'll tell you, though, like, it made me realize. I'm like, man, I talk to Dane every day when some of this stuff goes down. I had to text you. I was like, Dane, what's that game too? You know what I mean? I was a little off kilt.
That's what I'm saying, right? That's what we do here on this show. We build a community, and we thank everybody who watches us, everybody behind the scenes, the folks at LTN down there in Missouri making it happen. Hopefully, you feel a part of the culture, everybody that's out there and watching. But let me tell you, Kev, when you asked me about Game 2 and what I liked, I was wishy-washy on the side. The one thing I did say I liked was the over in this game, and I hope you bet it because it hit. If we look at what happened at Game 2 of the World Series yesterday, the Rays did come back. They win this game 6-4. And honestly, Kev, for me, this whole thing has been, can the Rays hit? We know the Dodgers can hit, right? But will the Rays actually come through? They're going to need someone more than Randy Arozarena if they are going to hang in this series. And what do you know? They started to get it. Brandon Lau with 2 home runs. Joey Wendell with 3 RBIs. They get the job done. The bats starting to wake up. That's got to be a good sign for the Rays, right, Kev?
Absolutely. I mean, we made the point when we were talking about the MVP market that the best hitter for the Rays during the course of the regular season was a 29-1 to win the World Series MVP. That, of course, being Brandon Lau. I mean, Dane, as we sit here through 2 games, only Mookie Betts in front of them? I mean, realistically, or a tie between the 2 guys? Am I off base there?
Maybe another Dodger, you know, the Belly, the Seegers of the world. But I think you are absolutely right. Over time, though, we're also going to have to look and see if there's, you know, the pitchers will catch up when they have their second outing, right? You know what I mean? So that will become a threat as the series goes on. If there's any dominant bullpen arms, that will, you know, kind of take shape as it goes along with multiple outings. But so far with the bats,
Castillo,
I think you're right, Kevin.
Castillo's hopes and dreams absolutely blew up almost immediately, only getting the one Fair. Out as opposed to the full Fair. Inning, the 95-1 shot. But look, that's how it goes. I was unsurprised by this. The one other thing that I was curious of, so, you know, again, it was another conversation I was actually having with you off air about game one. And I mean, you know, the analysis, those who were here with us when we previewed the game on Tuesday know the breakdown. I don't say to like gloat, but I got the game spot on. Kershaw pitched well. They got the Glasnow. They blew him out. Now, yep. I ultimately didn't bet it, so it threw me off a little bit because I was like, oh, you could have, you know, you had it right, whatever. But I expected the Rays to come back and win this baseball game. One thing I was interested in is how much did the conversation shift, a la the way the Lakers shifted the conversation with the Heat? Scrappy, this is a fight. Did people go, oh, the Dodgers are going to blow this team out. There goes our competitive World Series.
I got to tell you something, Kev, and you know that going into this series, I picked Tampa, right? I was worried, Kev. I was worried. And that's why I framed it in this way. You know, I'm listening to guys like Scotty Farrell on Coast to Coast, and he's making the point that like four dudes in this lineup are hitting below 200 in the playoffs, right? And so that was gonna have to happen. I needed to see whether it was Lau or someone like Margot or someone like Choi. I needed to see other bats, you know, kind of get in this. I needed to see the Rays score some runs. If this was another like 8-1 game or something, as we welcome in our radio audience from around the country, thank you for waking up early with us, especially out there on the West Coast, the mightier 1090, the very early line as you guys wake up. I was starting to hit panic, Kev. My finger was over the panic button about to hit it because I was wondering, like I said, where were the bats going to come from? Who was going to do it? So I'm very excited that Brandon Lau, who in the regular season was almost like an MVP candidate, right? And was slumping all playoffs. He is the kind of name who can get back to his normal self that will be huge for the Rays. I was watching and waiting for it. If it didn't come, I was going to come here and be like, I'm really concerned. I'm really worried. They saved me from the brink last night.
Yeah, again, so, and that's what I thought was going to happen because the Dodgers won that game handily, yeah. right? They were up 7-1, 8-1, and then a couple of, you know, meaningless runs tacked on by the Rays. But it was always going to be a bit of an overreaction because it was one baseball game. They were coming in against Gonsolin, who's significantly more hittable. We can talk about the decisions that Roberts made out of the pen and what that means going forward. I do want to make this point, though. I think the Rays sometimes maybe are not perceived to who they are. Oh, this great, true baseball's baseball team. You know who relies on the home run ball as much as anybody? The Rays.
The Rays?
It's how they generate almost all of their offense. And I'm okay with it because that's where we are in 2020. But I think that's something that people are going to have to get used to, especially if you're back in this team. It's home run ball or it's not a lot.
Yeah, I mean, listen, isn't that the case for 2020, no matter who you are, right? It's almost saying like an NFL team is built differently and then watching them still score 40 points a game in this day and age in the NFL. We will talk more about what we've seen so far and what we expect in game three when we come back right here on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Welcome back right here to the early line on the grid. Dane Martinez and the candle burner, Kevin Walsh. We got to catch up. You know, we haven't talked for almost 36 hours, which is absolutely ridiculous these days. So let's talk a little bit more about the World Series. And you mentioned the bullpen. And Kev, I keep on thinking that is going to be a big deal, right? You know, the Rays brought out some of their big boys, Castillo, Fairbanks, and they both get, you know, we're not... But, you know, Fairbanks gave up a run. Like you said, Castillo only faced, got one out and only needed two. But do you think now with the off day, because this is a big part of this series, Kev, the fact that there is no game today, right? We've talked about this in terms of managing the bullpen. I thought it was interesting also that the Dodgers decided to use game two as the Gonsolin and May sort of cobble it together, right? And they're going to have Bueller set up. They're going to have their guys going in the future. What do you think is the impact on this off day today?
I'll try this one on you. The Dodgers lost this game because they're off today. Because there's no world where they pull Gonsolin the way that they did if they were needing to pitch seven in a row the way we have the whole time. There's just no way they make that move. Did he give up a solo shot? Sure. Was there another runner that got on base? Fine. It was far from an ugly performance from Gonsolin, right? At least we didn't have enough time for it to be an ugly performance from Gonsolin. Right. And they went to their bullpen that we have no real reason to trust. We just don't. And Dustin May had a performance. I mean... Dane, it's very difficult. This is where baseball is so fascinating, man. But I don't know if he just didn't have his A-plus stuff. But on in-game live, I gave Mike Blewett a world of credit for it. Manny Margot hit two balls foul, and he went, oh, they're all over him. And Manny Margot was the first guy he saw. The ball wasn't put in play. And he went, they're all over him.
They're on.
And then they completely blew up Dustin May. And it's the type of stuff, we're in a World Series, right? We can't mess around here. If that is, he had some bad stuff, okay, fine. But if that is something that is a part of the zillion-page binder that these bench coaches have, you can't throw him again. And if you can't throw Dustin May again, that really messes with what the Dodgers want to do. Right? Because now I need more innings out of Walker Buehler. Now I need Julio Urias, right, to step up in a big way.
Urias then becomes the key. Right. Urias.
But like Dustin May, can he even start a baseball game? I think the way they pulled Gonsolin was because we're not breaking down game threes for today. And I thought the May performance, for me, would be bone-chilling if I were a Dodgers backer.
Yeah, listen, these things would compound on themselves if after, you know, if after using all of these arms, right, they still have to go today and potentially use them again if, say, Bueller didn't have it or if the game went long. So absolutely, they are lucky to have the off day and maybe they manage specifically for that. I don't know, though, Kev. I think they have to go back to Dustin May at some point, right? Like in game five or something, when this comes around, they're going to have to trust the formula. You know, you go, you dance with the girl you brought, right, on some level. And I don't think they can change their approach, you know, in the middle of the World Series, but you do make a great point. I look at the other side and I think they're going to need Charlie Morton to do Charlie Morton kinds of things, right? Like he's been a revelation and now at least they're lined up that they have, I believe, the pitcher that they trust the most in a big game spot going in the pivotal game three.
Morton's awesome. Morton won me some money in game seven when they beat the Astros. I really like Morton. Walker Buehler just threw his best game of the postseason, his last game out, first time. I think it was six scoreless. He went really, really good stuff from Walker Buehler. I'm excited about the game. I wanted to ask you though because I don't want to miss out on it. What did you think of the Blake Snell performance? Because it went from all time great World Series performance to good thing he had run support.
Yeah, I mean. I thought he was all right. You know, I thought he was all right. I thought that again, in the same way you're talking about, in the same way you're talking about Gonsolin, I am intrigued by how long they're letting these guys go. Right. And there you go. You nod. Right. I am intrigued by that piece. The management of rotations in this context is huge to me because also, Kev, I got to tell you, I played ball myself. Right. Although I'm not some major leaguer, but I played into the college level and stuff. And the idea of letting pitchers work out of a jam, right, is something that I think is necessary, you know, are they always going to work out? And sometimes will they get blown up? Yes. And honestly, obviously, if you're in game two of the World Series, do you need to have that shorter hook? I understand. But that's the part that's hard for me. So when you talk to me about his performance, right, it's hard for me to nail down because I don't know if these guys get their best opportunity to show that it's not bad. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
It 100% makes sense. Here's the thing with Snell. They show the graphic, and sometimes you see a graphic on the broadcast, and you're like, oh, get out of here. Other times you see it, and you're like, oh, thank you for this bit of research I might have missed out on. Through innings 1-3, Snell's basically unhittable. We get into the fourth and later, his ERA balloons to almost a 7. That is simple baseball math these days. I see you enough times, I'm going to hit you. And honestly, I was on we're doing in-game live, and I'm like, all we need is for him to get out of this inning, and the next inning starts with Mookie Betts. He'll have a no-hitter. They have to put him out there, and they shouldn't put him out there. I don't think the plan is to put him out there, but they have no choice. And ultimately, it did come to fruition. Now, Taylor takes him deep. Mookie gets on, Corey gets on, and then they have to pull him for Justin Turner. So that is, to me, I thought it stood out. When we come back around, we'll see Snell again, right? And I'll be interested to hear the perception. Because I think a lot of people are going to be like, yo, I'm back in Blake Snell. He was sick in that game. They got to him late, no problem. I'm fading Blake Snell after that performance. The more these guys see him, the more comfortable they are. And I really do believe that as much as he was putting on, literally an all-time great performance, first pitcher since Sandy Koufax, I think it was, only the second pitcher ever to have a no-hitter through four with 8 Ks. He was dominant. Not taking that away from him. But clearly, the more you see Snell, the more comfortable you get. This Dodgers team will clearly not the exception to the rule. We come back around to Snell. I'm on the Dodgers.
All right, that's interesting. And listen, we see this not as dramatically, but all the time, right? When they put up the stats of like first time through the order, second time through the order, we see this all the time. I got to tell you, when we have more time, I'm going to tell you a little bit more about my platform. If I was a Major League Baseball commissioner or manager, I would organize pitching staffs a little bit differently. And it would be closer to that. I wouldn't have an opener and I wouldn't have guys going complete games. I'd be on some modular, like every one of my staff would go 3 innings. Like a time through the order. And I would have it almost be like days would be sets of 3 guys, literally, that match up interestingly, like a lefty, a righty, a power baller, and a junk baller. I'd have little modules that would all go 3 innings at a time. That's the way I would organize it. And I think data will get to that point eventually. Kev, I do want to ask you real quick. I know we got the break, but you also always love to look at the movement in the series price after the game. And after 1-1, we're similar to where we were. You know, going into this, Dodgers minus 200, the Rays at plus 168. Has anything in this two games dramatically said like, uh-oh, one of them are going to run away from it? Or do you now think it's going to be a long series? Like we were saying, we were looking at 6 games and 7 games previously, right?
Yeah, I always thought it was going to be a long series. What stood out to me, the series spread market, right? You got even juice both sides, minus again, right? After game one, it went to plus 150-ish. On the Rays, plus a game and a half. Now they take a game, swing it all the way other round, minus 144, plus 1.5 games. I would have loved a plus 2.5 after that game. Unfortunately, it didn't pop up. I do still believe we are in for a long series here.
Absolutely. And anybody who was afraid of that, consider myself among them, got, like we said, saved from the brink by the offensive performance of the Tampa Bay Rays last night. When we come back, Kev, we're going to shift our attention to college football. You weren't here, but we heard from Joe Lisi. I got to catch you up on that. But for now, let's get caught up on everything with the Sports Grid news update.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn, and most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn-up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back in, everybody, right here to the Early Line, including our radio affiliates from around the country. Big shout out Dane Martinez and Kevin Walsh, putting the fun and functional sports content, giving you the edge on the grid here on the Early Line, 7 to 9 a.m. every weekday morning. It don't matter. We give you what you need. And Kev, you know, over the last, week or so, last couple of weeks, we started to talk more and more about college football, right? And yesterday, Kev, when you weren't here, we had our guy Joe Lisi from College Football Today here on this network giving us some insights. And it was interesting, Kev. It really was. I got to tell you something. He sees the potential for chaos theory just like I do. Okay, I was asking him, and I was trying to be like almost like a leading question, right? I was almost asking him like, listen, he was talking about Georgia and how they are still viable. We were then talking about the Big Ten. And, you know, it's interesting. I don't want to ask you. He said it's fair for even like a team like Penn State to be in the top 10. I'll give you Ohio State, right? We all think that they're going to be there, right? And then we also have Wisconsin. We also have Michigan and Minnesota, who, by the way, Joe thinks Michigan will be able to go into Minnesota and cover that number. That is a big game. That's the primetime game, I believe, on ABC this Saturday, okay? Michigan as road favorites going in a battle of top 25 teams in the first Big Ten kind of big game. He does think Michigan has the horses, even though they are depleted, to go into Minnesota and win. So I found that interesting, right? He thought that Penn State was good, but brought up, you know, from everything from Florida losing to LSU looking a lot worse than we thought, to obviously Oklahoma fading away. He also acknowledged and held out the opportunity that at least one of these Big Ten schools that are in the top 25 with records of 0-0 are gonna underperform, and as we talk about, fall by the wayside. He thought that that was very possible and that we were onto something, you know, the idea of actually ranking teams that are 0-0, right, Kev?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's a tough thing to do, but they've ranked these teams right before we ever play a game, and people always complain. There's a reason why the AP rank is what it is, and the College Football Playoff Committee doesn't come out with anything until, you know, late past the midway point of the season. So I understand that. I think the Big Ten being back is very exciting. I think the fact that Ohio State and Penn State are going to be playing each other next weekend is very valuable information, because although this is their first game of the year, it's a look ahead spot, because the game of the year for both those teams to a degree will be happening the following week, right? So a pseudo eliminator, not 100% going to crush you, but a pseudo eliminator. And you kind of go out, you got to go out there and you got to handle your business for the season debut. So that'll be on the mind. And I'll say this on Michigan. Okay. 18. That's about as low as I can remember them starting in a preseason poll since maybe year one of Harbaugh in Michigan.
Right.
And I'm wondering, is that a product of the recruiting class / talent that is around? Are people tired of buying Harbaugh in Michigan every mm-hmm. year? And this is where it's really valuable. So, Dane, let's say they do what Joe says. They win, they cover. 3-point spread as a road favorite. They win the game by 10.
Right.
They're going to beat the 21st team in the country, who will go to 0-1 and probably fall out of the top 25. Right. Like,
maybe they were never.
What does that win actually do for Michigan?
Yeah, I mean, let's put it, it does something, right? Because when you're on the road against the top 25 team, you could also fall to 0-1 and fall by the wayside, correct, right? So I do think that is important. And to your question, and this is where I framed it for Lisi also, Michigan had a lot of players when the Big Ten originally decided to not play. Michigan had a lot of players saying, peace, I'm out. I'm going to other schools so that mm-hmm. I could play. They were compromised, including Kev, their quarterback, who, I don't know if you know, is a guy named Dylan McCaffrey. If you know the last name, yes, Kev, it is Christian McCaffrey's little brother who was and he decided to opt out like in September. Okay, so yeah, that along with a lot of other reasons are why I thought Michigan was compromised. Joe Lisi thought they still had the horses. If we put the top 25 up, though, again, right? I was asking Lisi about our conversation, like, could this be the year, right? And I think you know, Kev, there's three pressure points that I am rooting for, right? The first is the number 6 team in the country, the Oklahoma State Cowboys, right? And I was like, listen, Joe, you know, the Big 12, this is a legit Power 5 conference, you know? And I couched it with this, right? If we accept Clemson, Alabama, and Ohio State, right, to run the table, to be the 3, you know, and then I told them, if Clemson runs the table, that means Notre Dame has lost. That means Georgia has lost again, right? So they, quote unquote, fall by the wayside. And then I asked him, how good is Oklahoma State? Like, can they get it done? And he said that this Oklahoma State, Iowa State game this Saturday is a huge proof point because of the fact that Oklahoma is down in that conference, that this may be their best resume building kind of win that they get an opportunity to have. And Joe thinks it can happen. Joe loves these Oklahoma State Cowboys. Chuba Hubbard, remember we talked about him when he was going, talking about Mike Gundy and the shirt he was wearing a few months ago, if you remember that. He loves Chuba Hubbard. And here's the other thing, and this is what is important for me. He says that the Oklahoma State Cowboys have by far the best defense in that conference, that they are the most physical in that conference. Now, I know saying defense and physical in the Big 12 is something of an oxymoron, but the fact that they may be able to do that and slow some of these other teams, I thought was interesting. He buys into the Cowboys against Iowa State this Saturday.
It's a big game. And I'll say, I'm almost surprised by the number. It's 3.5 for Oklahoma State on the road. Not from power ratings of these two teams, from the way college football usually works, I would usually expect Iowa State to be favored in the game, right? Or at least not 3.5, right? Still key numbers, like college football is still football. That's still a key number, of course, of 3.5. That gives me confidence in the Cowboys, that the number is 3.5. I think that goes to show they maybe are a cut above the rest of the Big 12. And, you know, Dane, the reason why when you and I were kind of talking to, you know, about our deep shots, right, and that, you know, you and I both now have come together for Oklahoma State and Cincinnati, and, you know, they make up the conglomerate for this show. They're 150-1, right? They're 150-1. Not only is Kansas State in front of them, which blows my mind,
ridiculous,
who like lost a game and is 20th in the country, Oklahoma is in front of Oklahoma State at 100.
They're not moving these lines. Yeah,
like they're not coming back. They're not. Like, I understand the argument is, yeah, but if they came back, they'd have a better chance to win the games than Oklahoma State. You don't get a refund if your team misses the top four. Like,
Kev, there's only like four or five games left in the conference schedule.
I'm saying.
You know what I mean? Like, there's not that many landmines left. And that's part of what people need to realize in this 2020 season, right? You know what I mean? Like, the opportunities for teams to fall by the wayside are fewer. So we like Oklahoma State. So does our guy, Joe Lisi. Kev, it gets better. You know, when I was talking about the physical, defensive-minded team, you know who he really loves as a physical, defensive-minded team, Kev? The Cincinnati Bearcats. He's all over them. He thinks that this, similarly, they have the ability to punch you in the mouth, and said that this game against SMU, which, by the way, is on the road for the Bearcats, is just as good of a resume-building win, right, than, like, Oklahoma State may get, than a lot of Big Ten games are. He believes that this American Athletic Conference game will allow Cincinnati to have a resume and hang around and still be alive. What do you think about this one? I know we might not handicap it per se, but the big picture question, especially buoyed by the love of Joe Lisi in the same way, a physical defensive team that can travel, let's put it that way, right? Like, their game will travel in this conference, Kev.
I don't really understand how they're 200-1. Like, to Kansas State's 100-1. I don't. It doesn't land for me, right? That is why these two teams stand out the way they do, right? Basically, I have a feeling that when you and I get into middle of November, we're going to be real pests for people about college football. Because I am relentlessly rational about what these rankings should be. You are very similar. So when there are hypocritical points being offered, they will be picked apart by they will be picked apart by this show. So if you said to me, well, Kansas State's 100-1 because they're in the Big 12, okay, then explain Oklahoma State being 150. So there's gaps in the market logically. So Cincinnati's 200-1 is a great play. I will say the money line is short enough on SMU. If you are going to invest in that number substantially, you should take a bit off of that number. You can honestly take the whole thing back, really, on SMU this week in a big game.
So over the break, we're going to pass the collection pot around. We're going to see if our guys behind the scenes, if we could get the syndicate going, lay a little bit on Cincy and Oklahoma State. But before we do, Kev, you got to hear the other team that he thinks is imminently live, because we may have to split this unit three ways.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, welcome back here, everybody. Right back to the early line. Dane and Kevin putting the fun in functional sports content. So, Kev, we're passing around the plate. We're going to build our early line syndicate, and we're going to lay 200-1 Cincinnati, 150-1 Oklahoma State. And let me put this disclaimer out. I'm not betting them because I think they're going to win the national championship. I'm betting them because I think I'm going to hedge or cash out if they get to number four, right? That's what we're looking for. But, Kev, Joe Lisi also thought about another option that we touched on. It's 100-1, and it's the Oregon Ducks. Kev?
Yeah.
Kev?
Ducks, he sold you?
Who are there. He basically said that they're a really good team, and they're the class of the Pac-12. And he also said USC is not on their schedule, right? And here's the other part. Here's the other part. He says USC's not on the schedule. He thinks they're the class of the conference. And to your point previously about the name brand of, like, how is Oklahoma ahead of Oklahoma State? How, you know, Cincinnati, right? He also thinks that name brand, that, like, when Oregon is, like, 2-0, right, and is winning by 30 points, it's a lot different than BYU 2-0 winning by 30 points, that all of a sudden Oregon will snap right back into good graces of like the public and the voters, and that a 6-0, and I can't believe, right, a 6-0 Oregon would be a team that can hop some of these teams we're cheering for. He thinks Oregon can get through their, you know, small Pac-12 slate that does not have USC on it and can make moves here.
So Oregon runs the table, right? Obviously, that's their only.
They're 100-1, Kev.
But I think that's telling. I think that's super telling. Them jumping the Cincinnati's and the Oklahoma States, no problem. Can they really jump Georgia? I don't know. I don't know if they jump Notre Dame, if Notre Dame covers their number against Clemson, right? Mm-hmm. Notre Dame is still going to have some bigger games there. And then contending against even a one-loss Big Ten team. Right. That's the problem for Oregon. Yes, they're in the Pac-12. But you mentioned USC's not on the schedule. I don't know if that's a good thing. I don't know if it is. Like, the whole conference is down.
Well, USC may make them not undefeated, but Joe believes that the prestige or the resume of an undefeated Pac-12 team, right, even like Oregon up against the branding of Oklahoma State, even, that that branding gets them there if they just have the bagel on that side of the record.
So this is where I talk about being relentlessly rational in college football and where it gets tricky. But I won't stand for, they're an unbeaten Pac-12 team. I don't care. Some of those other teams better find their way in the top 25. Otherwise, it means nothing to me. Right?
Right.
Again, we've seen.
And maybe that might happen, right? We haven't seen them on the field yet. Maybe it's Washington is impressive.
Right. Look, it's very plausible that, you know, they have UCLA, Cal, Washington, those are the teams. You know, Stanford, I don't think that's their first game, is going to be able to get there. Washington State, probably difficult as well. But could a UCLA, a Cal, or a UW find their way into the top 25 by the time they play them? Possibly. Maybe they play USC in the Pac-12 title game. USC does their part. Runs the table as well.
And that's like at that point, like 8 versus 14 in the country.
Right. Maybe even higher. That's the avenue. But then Bills at that point, resume. What's my USC number? You know what I'm saying? To where if my
only then the winner of the Pac-12. If we've got an undefeated Oregon versus an undefeated USC. Yeah. Right? In a Pac-12 tournament, championship game. And unfortunately, Oklahoma State, right? Like in the, you know, in Bedlam, which is the last game of the season, right? When they play Oklahoma, let's say, that doesn't look as impressive. It just won't, you know? And the idea of the prestige of these teams. Lisa, I know you're rational, right? And I agree with you. I think we have to, in a rational way, whether you like it or not, Kev, accept the idea of the prestige these teams are coming in with, whether we like it or not.
Pac-12 doesn't have a lot of prestige. They're routinely
Oregon
left
may
out
have
of the
more
college
than
football
most
playoff.
Oregon may be the only team that the public is like, oh, yeah, they're good.
For sure. But they still don't have the prestige of some of these Big Ten teams, a Notre Dame, a Georgia. That's kind of what I'm saying. And I will say this as well, right? One of the nice things about the late start for the Pac-12, you can get involved in the conference winner at plus money before this all starts to unravel. Because USC is the same 100-1 that Oregon is. You look there. Oregon's plus 170 to win the Pac-12. USC is plus 220. Utah and UW are both 7-1.
Next.
Arizona State's 9-1. Every other team below that is in the 20s or higher. So basically, they're telling you only 5 reasonable options, massive gap between Oregon and USC. So this is kind of what I said about, you know, you might want to take a money line, this, that, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to throw the Oregon number down, you probably should be taking them to win the Pac-12 as well. It's the only way you even have any kind of life in this market.
All right, fair enough. Well, At this point, the early line syndicate, I believe, and tell me if you're with me, guys, we are on Oklahoma State, Cincinnati, and quack, quack for the Ducks, or at least that the Pac-12 champion is undefeated. And then we are going to see, we're going to learn if there's a bagel for Oklahoma State or USC or Oregon and Cincinnati, and somehow a one loss Penn State or a one loss Notre Dame, Georgia may be different because the SEC is such king. I get you, right? But I think Georgia's going to get a second loss, okay? I think Georgia's going to get a second loss in the SEC championship game, making it irrelevant. I think we have the opportunity for, in essence, coming out of this season, I believe we're going to have an argument to extend to eight because we're going to have a legitimate undefeated team, whether it's Oklahoma State, whether it's Oregon, USC, Cincy, SMU, BYU, and they are going to be measured up against a one-loss Big Ten, ACC, or SEC school. And if they lose that voting, then I think we're going to start to hear about that expansion. It's going to be very, very interesting. You got anything else on this, Kev?
I just want to say, I've seen this movie before. Our hearts might get ripped out as soon as this weekend. They're both playing against ranked teams on the road.
Yeah.
But the early line conglomerate money line parlay is plus 243 for both Cincinnati and Oklahoma State to win this week. It's not bad.
Survive in advance for the syndicate teams. You know, it's not bad, but forget that. Let's just throw a couple shekels on 200 to 1 right now and then cash out by Thanksgiving and we'll be good to go. But in any event, Kev, as we keep it moving. Actually, Kev, there is one college football game today. Right? That maybe we should talk about as it gets going. Listen, there's football every day of the week, it feels like these days. Arkansas State, it's a lower level game, goes to Appalachian State, where Appalachian State is -13.5, just shy of that key number, although there is juice. So maybe you want to get it now because it might go to 14. Kev, the total in this one is 68.5, which I think is crazy. But you said they zoomed over it last week.
Oh, yeah. I mean, last week we saw Arkansas State playing kind of this primetime spot. The game was 59-52. It was outrageous. It was a blast. I was all about it. App State scores at will. They're coming off a game where they had put up 52 points themselves. 68, you probably got to play the game over the number. The 13.5 is a lot, though. So App State's lone loss on the year to Marshall, actually ranked. You go through the Marshall schedule, by the way. Not many losses on there, but I don't think Marshall
can go
undefeated.
Are they
undefeated too? Yes, they are. But Marshall could go unbeaten twice, and they're not going to get into the top four. But here's the thing with Arkansas State. Their loss is also to a top 25 team in Coastal Carolina, who we saw the other day beat up on Louisiana
Lafayette.
So these are, as much as this might look like a dirty Thursday night college football game, these are actually two teams that are pretty solid with decent enough resumes coming into the year. And I think you might want to lean with the points. It might be too many points, especially if we can get up to 14. And I'd lean to the over. And listen, college football teasers, my goodness, you want to talk about getting ready for your heart to be ripped out. You play a college football teaser. But a 7-point teaser of getting Arkansas State at 20 and a hook and bringing the number down to 61. I think, by the way, I'd rather bring the total down because the thing with college football is we can get to 100 and I can't sit here and be like, it's such a bad beat. Whereas, you know, we'll have a good chance to get to 61. So I think this is honestly it's a legit good game. This isn't a college football game with two, complete scrub teams. You're like, I can't believe I threw money on. These are two solid teams here tonight. I think it's a fun game.
All right, fair enough. All we need to do, it's almost like the NCAA tournament. You got to survive in advance. That's what our syndicate teams are going to have to do. Survive and advance. But remember, all 2020, Kev, we've talked about variance. All 2020, we've talked about this unknown coming in. And in the college football season, when these teams have fewer games and fewer landmines, it's going to be very, very interesting, especially because the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are getting to these staggered starts. So we know a little bit about some teams. And now these other teams are coming online that we just don't know about yet. Someone is going to underperform in the Big 12. I can't wait to see who. But as we turn our attention, Kev, to the NFL, one of the things, this is an interesting story. I want to go through some of the injuries, some of the news and notes that we saw. And then in hour or two, we're definitely going to look into Thursday Night Football, which features your Philadelphia Eagles, or at least the ones that are still healthy, by goodness sakes. Yeah, but one thing that I saw that was interesting in the NFL yesterday, did you see this, Kev? The Las Vegas Raiders had Trent Brown, one of their offensive linemen, that's positive for COVID-19. And this is something I remember mentioning to you before the season started. Like, what happens if a quarterback get it to the rest of the quarterback room? What happens if an O-lineman gets it to the rest of the O-line room? And the Raiders decided to send home all five starting offensive linemen because they had been in contact with Trent Brown practicing and earlier in the week, even though they're coming off of their bye. You know, they're trying to preserve the rest of their O-line. I find this fascinating because there has been, as of yet, no talk of the Raiders game not happening this week, yet we could have our first situation of a position group being entirely compromised. What do you think about this story? They've sent the Raiders home. I think their young safety, Jonathan Abram, also got sent home because they thought he had contact with Trent Brown.
Yeah, I think the idea that a team would have to send out a full slate of a backup offensive line is unimaginable, really, right? I mean, you talk about things that move a number. I don't know what a sports book can do to represent.
Like, this is more than Cam Newton not playing for the Patriots.
Correct. Correct. The number right now sits at the Bucs laying 4. I believe before any of this news, it was the Bucs laying 3. I mean, the Raiders are playing the Bucs. Like, this is maybe the best defense in football. Yeah. Like, you want to talk about a team where I'd like to have my full complement of offensive linemen against. It sure would be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So,
can I bet a Josh Jacobs under prop bet?
I mean, you can do all of the things. I don't know how they navigate that, because here's really the big thing I would say, Dane. Let's just say it did knock out the whole offensive line. That might kind of classify as a bit of an outbreak, and that really might have to cancel the game. And this is the Vegas Raiders, who are coming off of their bye week.
Right. They don't have the wiggle room. Absolutely right. And you talk about they play the Tampa Bay Bucks, you know, and then that's a cross-conference game messing up the body. You know, I've been saying it for a while. The wiggle room is gone. This is something we have to monitor. We'll talk about it more on the other side of the break here on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back in, everybody, right here to the Early Line. Kevin Walsh and Dane Martinez. And Kev, we were talking about this Las Vegas Raiders issue that for me, what's weird also is that, like, this is not news. This was sort of kind of, like, quiet yesterday a little bit, right? Like, they sent this guy home. They're going to send the entire offensive line home. I think we're going to learn a lot more about this today. You know, they were talking about it as an abundance of caution for everyone, not Trent Brown. But as you know, we get our testing day by day in the morning. And so that story will certainly move. You talk about an abundance of caution. Kev, I think there's going to be a team that needs an abundance of caution sometime soon, because after next week, the suspension for Antonio Brown is over. And we started to hear yesterday that there will be a market for Antonio Brown. One of the leaders in the clubhouse seemed to be the Seattle Seahawks, which I find interesting after the emergence of DK Metcalf. They already have Tyler Lockett. Josh Gordon has even flirted with them back and forth. But it seems like there may be some other teams in the mix. As Adam Schefter said yesterday, the Seahawks are not alone. Let me ask it to you this way, Kev. What type of team, contender, locker room, what have you, scheme of offense, whatever it is, what kind of team do you think ultimately in 2020 needs or leverages the services of AB?
So I think there's a couple of teams that are pretty obvious fits when you want to talk about managing AB. The Seahawks, because you trust Russ. The Ravens, because I trust Lamar and his cousin and Hollywood to be able to handle him. Yeah. Right? Brady and Tampa Bay. Those two apparently fell in love with one another in literally a week out there in New England, right? So that's a spot. Those are three pretty, like, obvious spots that would jump out. Maybe the Saints might fit that description as well.
Right.
I'd be interested, though, in a team like the Packers, who desperately could use that kind of a player.
Sure.
I think the Eagles fit that description. I don't know. Or Travis Fulham's fine. Maybe not. I am curious to see, does this become like a short list, or does he go for opportunity slash money? Because like, if it's all systems go on AB, then there should be significant dollar amounts thrown at this guy.
Yeah, I mean, the talent is obvious. So are the issues, right? What I'll say from the fantasy side, if you think you're a playoff team, go ahead. But in the short term, I ain't putting him on my roster. Hour number two of the early line is up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.